Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 120. My name is John. All our times have come here, but now they're gone. Seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like they are. Every generation believes things are the worst they've ever been. A general knowledge of history often takes care of that. The people who decry our political climate is the worst ever forget we've had a former Secretary of the Treasury shot in an illegal duel because he insulted his political opponent. The people who say the planet is hotter than it's ever been forget, or likely never learned, that the natural fluctuations of the sun cause global warming like it did 56 million years ago, or 250 million years ago, long before humanity. My point is that no matter what extreme people want to point out, there's very likely another example equal or greater to theirs. So, I know lots of other bad things are happening all over the place, all the time, but there's just something about how things have been recently that, well, they just have me down. These things that have happened are nothing new. Tragedies happen, government disappoints, people fail. The world keeps spinning. I keep hoping this is the part of the narrative where things look bleak for the good guys, just before a miracle turns things around. Or maybe I'm just tired of feeling sick and tired. I had a plan for a podcast about politics, which you'll still get from me in protracted form. Unfortunately, as I planned for this month's monologue, I was compelled to stop and ponder tragedy and add it to my discussion. Twice. I'm one of those rare weirdos who likes to watch the Pro Bowl. Gina and I had just returned home from lunch. I lost track of time and realized the game had already started, so I turned on ESPN. Instead of the game, a graphic of a world map was on the screen, and I guessed, well, maybe I did get to the channel just before the game began. Then numbers flashed in a countdown from 5 to 1, followed by the ABC logo, and finally, the ABC breaking news screen. Now I'm wondering if I put it on the wrong channel. Why would ABC have breaking news on ESPN? Is there some kind of national tragedy? Did we have an assassination or another terrorist attack? Then the reporter and the title came on the screen. And I shouted out loud, "Oh my God!" And from upstairs, Gina asked me what was wrong. And I replied, "Kobe Bryant is dead." I never met Kobe Bryant. I never expected to. If anything, he constantly frustrated me every time he took the court against my San Antonio Spurs. And I admit, I took great schadenfreude in 2003. When the Spurs ended the Lakers' 3-year reign as NBA champions, and Kobe was visibly crying at the end of the game. But goddamn, he was one hell of a player. It's like, "I hate you, Kobe. Come play for the Spurs." As always happens with breaking news like this, the initial information is sketchy and often incorrect. Early reports had 5 total people on board and that Kobe and his four daughters were there. It turned out 9 people lost their lives, and one of his daughters was part of the group. It's important to remember that while the sports world mourned the loss of one of their own and his daughter, for the families and friends of 7 other people, that was the worst day of their lives. But please understand, this is not to mock or chastise people who mourn the death of a celebrity. Gina and I sat in shock watching the news and the outpouring of grief from athletes and sports reporters. We the living invariably think about how the death of another affects us. There's a reason why they say funerals are for the living. As the information settled and the truth rose to the top, I couldn't stop thinking about his wife and surviving children. What emotional torture is going on in their lives? 1 minute, Dad and sister are off to a game, and the next TMZ is telling you they're dead. So many tragedies happen every day. Even now, worries of pandemics fill our newsfeed. Atrocities and accidents are rampant. I'd never stop if I tried to talk about all of them. I turned 48 years old just a few days before this tragedy where 9 people lost their lives in a helicopter accident in California that turned the sports world upside down. I've been thinking about my own mortality. I even talked about it in a podcast about a year ago. Statistically speaking, I likely have fewer days ahead of me than I have behind me. Sometimes as I drive down the highway to work and some jackass is swerving in and out of lanes, I wonder if today is the day. When Gina texts a message to me that she's leaving work late and she'll be home soon, I can't help but worry that maybe she won't. I don't know which is harder to bear, the thought of my life without Gina or the thought of her sorrow if I was gone. Fatalist? Maybe. But death is one of the guarantees of existence. I've tried to be more conscious of moments we have together and not take them for granted. Maybe there will be decades more. But I just don't trust the cruelty of life. And that's really the great lesson to be learned from this kind of tragedy, isn't it? You never know when that kiss goodbye from a loved one is the last. You never know when your alarm clock goes off in the morning that you're waking up to the worst day of your life. You never know. Kobe Bryant may be the catalyst, but I couldn't let it pass without a toast to honor all 9 of them. I'm going to get into the political part of the podcast now. But sadly, there is still more tragedy to discuss later. Ricky Gervais made some comments at the Golden Globes that clearly irritated some of the leftists out there and delighted right-wingers. I'm not sure how much of it he was actually serious about. If he was just doing it to show how easy it could be to turn the tables on the people who claim moral high grounds, or if he was just trying to get right-wingers to watch his Netflix special. But he had some tough barbs that clearly made some people uneasy in the crowd. He did a Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself joke and immediately noted that there were many in the crowd who were friends of his. He joked about the lack of schooling for them and Greta Thunberg. That's her name, right? I'm still not going to be bothered to look it up. He chastised them for campaigning against sweatshops while actively supporting corporations who routinely use them. The line everyone was talking about the day after was Gervais continuing the thought about hypocrisy, telling the Hollywood crowd they don't understand what a normal life is, and therefore have no right to stand up at an award show and give a political speech chastising the public. I can understand why a lot of the leftists got upset about that and railed against him in columns that night and the next day. Again, I really don't know if he was serious about highlighting the hypocrisy or just wanted to get more people to watch his Netflix projects. But not long after, on Twitter, he posted, quote, "How the fuck can teasing huge corporations and the richest, most privileged people in the world be considered right-wing?" End quote. Well, to quote John McClane, "Welcome to the party, pal." You're only allowed to shame the rich elitists if they aren't leftists. I mean, you gotta know this, don't you? If you're savvy enough to understand connections to Epstein and sweatshops, then certainly you understand that anything hypocritical a leftist does is perfectly fine under the standards of people like the Hollywood elite. That's why it's okay for Bernie Sanders to be a millionaire one-percenter owning three houses, for Elizabeth Warren to have a net worth of around $12 million, and for Hillary and Barack to be worth in the neighborhood of $40 million. But the wealthy not privileged enough to be on the left's acceptable list are evil and deserve to have their earned wealth forced from them and given to people who have, quote-unquote, less. And that's the key, isn't it? It's whoever these supercilious cultists deem to be worthy can have all the wealth and power they want. But if you don't make the cut, then you're targeted for consumption. Welcome to the leftist double standard, Ricky. I was just talking about Kobe Bryant's death earlier. In the hours after the tragedy, an MSNBC reporter misspoke. People recorded the mistake and posted it online. If you run a search, you will easily find it. I will not quote what she said for reasons you will quickly understand. This reporter began by saying Los Angeles Knicks, obviously and stupidly using the wrong team nickname, 3,000 miles apart. But halfway through the word Knicks, she switched to the second half of the correct name, Lakers. Now, a lot of people were up in arms about it, and the first time I listened to it, I really thought she said a racial slur. However, if you turn up the volume and listen carefully, you will hear a definitive K sound, and after I did so, I realized she had just mixed the two team nicknames together. A couple of hours after her live error, she tweeted exactly what I just said, mixed the names together. Now, I'm satisfied with her explanation, but a lot of right-wingers aren't. And that, in a small way, is understandable too. Can you imagine if a Fox News reporter made this same error? Can you imagine the abject hatred and venom the leftists would have directed at them? The calls for the immediate dismissal? It's a double standard. And all you right-wingers out there can stop cheering. Balanced budgets and fiscal responsibility are your demands every time a Democrat is in office. But once your guy is in place, the debt just keeps rising. Mitt Romney decides to be the lone Republican in favor of impeachment, not affecting the outcome in any way whatsoever. And he goes from a misunderstood former political candidate to the modern-day Benedict Arnold. You know, humanity in general has never been good at live and let live. How dare you have enough money to live extravagantly? We have to make laws to force you to give that to others. After we take our cut and live extravagantly, of course. How dare you publicly display your alternative sexuality? We have to make laws to force you into hiding, even though we secretly do it too. How dare you possess weapons that scare me? We have to make laws to force you to surrender your means of protecting yourself and giving those who have superior weaponry a better chance of hurting you. How dare you put a substance in your body that alters your mind and perception? We have to make laws to prevent you from taking those. But we're happy to make money selling you all the harmful prescription drugs we can. If you're too rich, or debaucherous, or own scary guns, or take scary drugs, then we think you're a bad person. So what? What the fuck do you care how I live my life? Well, you're doing something we don't like. It doesn't affect us in any way whatsoever, but it upsets our delicate sensibilities. So if you're rich, we're going to tell everybody you're the cause of all their problems. If you're gay, we're going to tell everyone you're destroying the fabric of our society. If you're a gun owner, we're going to tell everyone you're a Nazi, responsible for people who die in mass shootings. If you're a drug user, we're going to tell everyone you're a loser who ought to be shunned by society and tossed in the gutter. Every time you choose to demonize and dehumanize someone who dares to believe something different from you, the country falls apart a little more. Every time you mock and degrade someone for not being in complete lockstep with your ideology, the country falls apart a little more. Every time you vote for legislation or a politician that supports legislation that takes away the natural rights of others, this country falls apart a little more. Every time you revile the sins of your political opposition after you've turned a blind eye to the sins of your political allies, the country falls apart a little more. Because this is supposed to be a country where people are free to live their life how they want. That means some people will live their lives in a way you may not agree with. But unless their actions affect your natural rights to live as you wish, then you shouldn't be able to tell them how to live. It amazes me sometimes how many people, even friends or acquaintances on social media, will go on and on about their right to live how they want, but turn around and seek to deny another group that same right. The animosity is reflected in our politics. Look at the State of the Union address from a few days back. You mean to tell me that Trump refused to shake the hand of the top Democrat who has been trying to remove him from office? Do you mean to tell me that Pelosi tore up a speech of the Republican she has open disdain for? Do you mean that petty, petulant politicians acted petty and petulant? Oh my stars! I never thought that would happen! Look, I think I've said this before, but I may as well do it again because it's definitely been a while. This is every State of the Union speech, Republican or Democrat, I have ever heard or read. My fellow Americans, I am the President of the United States of America, and I am here to tell you that because I am in charge, everything is great. But not everything is great. There are bad things happening out there, and it's all the fault of our political opponents. Because they are so nefarious and dirty, you should be afraid of them. But don't be afraid, because I have a plan that will make everything perfect for every person in our country, and probably the rest of the world. Here's my list of things I'm going to do. But I'm not going to be honest with you about how much it will cost you taxpayers or how it will erode your natural rights. And anybody from the opposition who argues against what I say is an unpatriotic liar. To prove my point that I will save this nation, look up at that person in the audience while I tell you a story. This is a single example of how my plans worked, and I'm hoping you'll think that means the same thing will work for everyone else. But don't think too much about it, because this is a feel-good story about feelings. And hearing this singular perfect narrative, you should feel good. But now is not the time to feel good, because there is still much to do. I know that if I make it sound like I'm working for you, and my party is working for you, then you think that the government is working in your best interest. Keep thinking that no matter what, and anyone who shows you evidence to the contrary is a crazy, conspiracy theory, unhinged libertarian. Thank you, and may God bless America. Okay, maybe I added a little of my own commentary in there, but it's still pretty accurate as far as I can tell. Of course, the next day, after Trump and Pelosi's little public hissy fit, the biggest political drama of the current president's term ended with all the surprise of a Marvel movie. The impeachment trial is over. Who won? Two words. They did. They, who just got you, with your tax dollars, to pay for a multi-million dollar ad campaign disguised as a trial with an outcome that was never in doubt even before it began. They, the right-wing politicians who can go to their sycophants and say, "Give me money so we can fight that paper-ripping harpy." They, the left-wing politicians who can go to their sycophants and say, "Give me money so we can fight the evil orange meanie." They on the left and the right who want to continue the endless wars, who want to invade your privacy, who want to tell you how much of your earned income you are allowed to keep, and who want to force you to live your life based on their morality. They who want to condition you to hate and agitate other citizens for daring to believe something different from you. They who want to continue to divide this nation. The impeachment trial is over. Who won? Two words. Not you. I like that last line. That's the kind of line I like to end on, and normally this would be where I would offer my traditional closing. Unfortunately, as I was in the middle of the writing phase of this month's podcast, another death tragically struck. I woke up on the morning of Saturday, February 8th, a little late. Gina had just woken as well, and we decided to head out for breakfast. While she finished dressing, I decided to hop on social media. In a matter of seconds, my heart sunk. Orson Bean was dead. That's bad enough. Then I read the cause of his death. Generally speaking, I believe a 91-year-old deserves a peaceful death surrounded by loved ones. Reading he had been hit by a car while out for a walk with his wife was gut-wrenching. Now, I'll be honest, up until a couple of years ago, I couldn't have been able to tell you who Orson Bean was. If you showed me a picture, my response would have been something along the lines of, "Oh, yeah, that guy." I'd seen him on TV shows here and there over the years. After the death of Andrew Breitbart, I listened to an interview with Orson Bean remembering his son-in-law. I'm almost positive that was on the Dennis Miller radio show. After that, I made sure to listen anytime I saw Orson Bean's name. Orson Bean is a grandpa you wish you had. Yeah, I had a pretty decent grandpa, but he was nowhere near as much fun to listen to as Orson Bean. His stories were amazing and delightful, and his jokes were always hilarious. I got the impression that he was the kind of guy who would bring smiles to the faces of people wherever he went. That evening, I listened to a recent two-part interview from Dennis Miller's podcast, Sip Whiskey, like I'm doing now, and thought about how much laughter he brought to my life just from a few interviews and television appearances. The world today just seems a little bit less knowing that he's not in it anymore. No more stories, no more jokes. And if I feel this way about a man who I did not know at all, save for this one facet I had access to, I can't imagine the heartache his family and friends feel. As we navigate these strange days, questioning the sanity of our politicians, watching our nation tear itself apart over conditioned hatred of one another, the loss of people like Kobe Bryant or Orson Bean or Kirk Douglas does affect us. I get that some people are upset because these entertainers are given spotlights while horrible things happen to ordinary people every day. But when tragedy like this happens, it reminds us that you just never know how much time you have left. If you are shaken by the loss of a spectacular athlete, or a brilliant actor, or a keen raconteur that you've never met, it's all the more reason you should look at your loved ones right now, remind them how precious they are to you, and savor every moment you have, because you just never know. So, to wrap up, I am going to tell you my all-time favorite joke that I heard from Orson Bean. He told it a few years back on another Dennis Miller Option interview. Now, fair warning, I don't have his impeccable delivery. And it's vulgar. So, if you don't like that kind of stuff, either don't listen or just fucking deal with it. A cheapskate is walking down the street and he sees a hooker. He asks, "How much can I get for 25 cents? The hooker says, "For a quarter, you can stick your big toe in me." So he accepts, and they go to a room, and he does his business with his big toe. Several days later, he wakes up, and the toe is swollen and purple and sore. He goes to the doctor. Doctor runs the test and comes back to the man and says, "Sir, I don't know how else to tell you this, but you have syphilis of the big toe." The guy ponders that news for a few seconds and he says, "Well, Doc, I bet that's the strangest thing you ever saw." The doctor replies, "You know, normally I would say yes, but just earlier today, I met a woman with athlete's cunt." A toast to Orson Bean, 91 years old at the time of his death. A full life, well lived, and yet tragically cut all too short. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.